Welcome back to Perfect Takes. We have a pretty jam-packed episode this week as we go over the NFL draft. We're going to kind of put our focus on the NFC this week. We'll then look at the AFC next week. So without further ado, this is Perfect Takes. I'm your host, Stephen Patton, joined by my co-host, Jake LaQuire. Jacob, how do you feel about this weekend, both from a Carolina Panthers fan perspective and just the NFL fan in general?
I mean, I love the draft, right? It's like Christmas for football fans, so it's always a good time. And the first round in particular was kind of nuts, like with some of the picks, which we'll talk about one of them today. I bet everybody knows what I'm talking about. But the Panthers draft, I'm not as warm on. I think we did okay. Like, we didn't do bad or anything, but definitely would have gone some other with some other players at the picks we had. But I still think we got some good players, so ready to talk about it.
Yeah, no, it should be a lot of fun. We are changing things up this week because of how sad we are about the Panthers draft. Jacob's actually going sober this week. And myself, I'm drowning my sorrows with liquor. Going to be drinking some Jack Daniel's Tennessee whiskey. It's like honey infused. So it's got a right amount of sweetness and then still that kind of like liquor kind of taste. I don't know the proper terminology for it. But we'll either be doing whiskey of the month or beer of the week moving forward. We're still deciding on that. But without further ado, we'll kick off the Panther section. We actually picked on day one, traded back in the first round to pick number 32 with the Buffalo Bills. And we selected a wide receiver who last week on the pod, you predicted to go to them at 33.
Yeah, I was off by one, I guess, and Leggett himself apparently told the world over and over that we were going to take him at 33, and I guess the Panthers brass was like, all right, we got to move up now just in case, and so they move up one pick at around midnight, I guess, on Thursday. They take Leggett, who was their guy all along, and I guess they were pretty happy with that. He's a local guy from Mullen, South Carolina. If you can hear his accent, you'll tell that he's local. He's got a really strong country accent, which is always fun to hear with NFL players. And then they were pretty active trade-wise throughout the rest of day two. But day three, I think they stood pat at all of their picks and picked there. So it was pretty exciting weekend as a Panthers fan.
Yeah, we should touch on the second round pick. So we initially had pick 39 from the Giants. We trade with the Rams back, getting massive haul, getting a future second next year, which is great. We didn't have a second next year because of the trade we made with the Bears last year. But then from pick 52, where the Rams selected, we traded with the Colts back up to 46 to select Jonathan Brooks, who is your RB1 in this draft class. I think he is the best running back. He is coming off an ACL tear, and he probably won't be 100% this year. How did you like that pick? This isn't a premium position. This is one of those non-premium positions that you don't see get a lot of retention rates or big contracts in terms of that next second signing. How do you feel about it just from a player standpoint, not so much the non-premium position portion?
Well, they reported on Friday night when he was picked that he's supposed to be healthy by July, which will be training camp time. I'm not quite sure if that's going to be the case, but that's exciting nonetheless. I really like Jonathan Brooks. I think that he has a chance to be RB1 this season if his health holds up. He's certainly dynamic with the ball in his hands. He reminds me of Aaron Jones. I think we talked about him way back when we did running backs a couple of months ago on the pod, but I'm excited to get him. I do think it was a bit rich, though, where we drafted him, considering I don't think the next back went until, I think 66 is when Trey Benson was picked by the Cardinals. So a little early, but if we stole him from the Cowboys, who reportedly were all over him and wanted him a ton, then that makes me happy because I'm a Cowboys hater.
Yeah, I mean, that's great that we took a player off the Cowboys board, but when this player more than likely isn't going to produce the surplus value that potentially a Zach Frazier or Adonai Mitchell or even a Marshawn Nealon there would have at 46 or 52, and Adonai Mitchell and Marshawn Nealon were there at 52. So it's one of those things that you just wonder, did we capitalize on the surplus value at the position And then did we address a true need on the team? Because Chuba looks good, and there were other running backs in this class that I feel like we could have grabbed at pick 141, 142 if we didn't trade those picks to kind of move up.
Yeah, and you can talk about that for the next pick too. Trevin Wallace, the linebacker from Kentucky. He's a really strong athlete. He can move all over the field and stuff like that. But again, it's a linebacker versus something that could have been like a corner or an O-lineman like you're talking about. So they definitely skimped on the position value or position surplus really throughout the entire draft, except for Leggett and Jaden Cremetti, I believe is how you say his name, late in day three. They really went with non-premium position guys, but I think it was to, number one, fill depth at positions that they needed depth for, like linebacker, defensive line, even running back, I guess, because Chuba's contract expires this season, or after this season, rather, and Miles Sanders isn't very good. And then even the tight end pick, like our tight ends haven't really been inspiring the last few years. So they really went after things that they knew they wanted. It just wasn't the maybe analytically sound kind of draft that a lot of people who are really interested in that and really subscribe to that way of thinking would have preferred.
It didn't seem smart to take those positions, especially when we sign Jewel, when we have Shaq Thompson back on a cheaper deal. And Wallace could end up blossoming into a young star. He's a younger player. He's got phenomenal traits. Dan Morgan drafted him. Dan Morgan was a phenomenal linebacker. He's trying to bring that back to Carolina. I'm not knocking him for that. It's just a matter of, okay, you already took a non-premium position with a top 50 pick. Do you want to double down with that? And in the case with Brooks, he doubled down by trading up for that position. So there were four trades that went down in between day one and day two. We traded up to 32. We traded back from 39 to 52, and then up from 52 to 46. And then the last trade was, I believe we traded back from 65 to 72. So I actually like that. If you're going to take a non-premium position, what they did by trading back in the third was brilliant, because you're netting draft capital, you're gaining surplus that way, and then you're taking a non-premium position that you feel comfortable with. And again, all three guys that we've talked about all had visits with the team, which is really cool. Again, this is kind of in line with what we saw with Scott Fitterer's regime when Dan Morgan was already in the building. So guys that we're bringing in for top 30 visits more than likely are going to be a Carolina Panther in drafts moving forward.
Well, let me put it like this. If Jonathan Brooks, if we move down to 52 or whatever the Rams pick was and didn't trade back up to 46, would that be a good process? Moving back, and even though it's not premium yes. position, not trading up.
If we had taken Brooks now, at 52, that would have been fine.
Look at it like this. If we trade back to 46 and get the Rams second rounder, would that be good process? Like, say whoever was at 46 gave us their second rounder to do it.
Yes, but we had to give up more of our draft capital with that.
In the end, 52. In the end, with the Wallace trade as well, we got a fifth back from that. So the fifth round picks that we gained or lost kind of cancel out. And you can look at it like kind of how I look at it. We traded back to 46 and got a second round pick, which is a huge win to me. It's just, if you put the two together like that, it looks better in my opinion.
And that's fair. Earlier today, and the Perfect Takes account has this posted, reposted it myself on Twitter. But it broke down kind of the picks that we gave up in trades and picks we received in trades. And if you look at it with a 55% discount rate, which is typically how the NFL views pick value at the NFL level, we can talk about whether there should be a discount rate, if it should be that high. That's up for discussion, but it's typically about 55%.
For future picks, right?
Yes, for future picks. So pick in 2025, pick in 2026, those are going to be discounted because those are picks that you don't have right now in the present day, and there's no present value. That's something that's going to materialize and mature at a later date. That being said, when you look at what we gave up, we in essence gave up like a second round pick to make all these moves up. Now, if you don't discount that future pick, it's an early third round pick. But again, I would prefer an early third round pick rather than doing all this, like jumping around, letting the board come to us, trading back in a couple instances. I didn't agree with us trading into the first round. The whole fifth year option is kind of bogus unless you get...
Planet Fitness has everything you need to get stronger just around the corner, so you can give everything you've got. Whether you want to crush a few reps before class with our expanded strength equipment or sweat it out on your way home from work. With over 2,800 locations, there's a Planet Fitness close to you. And most are open 24 hours. Join the club today and save $28 or more when you join for $1 down, $15 a month. Cancel anytime. Deal ends January 30th. Are you coming? Planet Fitness. We're all strong on this planet. See club for details.
To the point that that player hits their ceiling and you extend them. But if they hit their ceiling, you're going to extend them and pay them what they want. Getting an extra year on the deal really, I don't think is worth it. And again, that was pick value we lost because we wanted to make sure we grabbed our guy.
Yeah, I agree there. I think the fifth year option is kind of overblown. If you look at what the Eagles do, and I think they're the number one team to look at this kind of stuff for, they extend early, like Devontae Smith after year three got extended. He's below the top rate deal because he hasn't really hit his ceiling yet, which is good. If he continues to ascend, cheaper player. If he doesn't ascend, he's at the right value. And if he gets worse, you can cut him earlier, get rid of him earlier. So I think that's the way to do it. I think the fifth year is overblown. But when I look at the draft as a whole, I look at it as we walked into the draft with no second round next year, with no first rounder and no sixth rounder. And we turn that into one pick every round and a second next year. So from that perspective, I like it. What I don't like is some of the players that were taken at the spots where we ended up with the picks. I think or at least the way I value it, they were a bit rich on Leggett and Wallace. I actually love the JT Sanders value, but that's kind of how I view it. I think the draft as a whole for me is kind of like a C. I wasn't the biggest fan of some of the players, but I like the overall process of not losing a ton, not losing net picks this year. We came in with seven, we left with seven, and we got a second next year from the Rams, who just lost maybe the best defender of our lifetime from their team to retirement, and Stafford's also getting older, so who knows how good that pick could be next year.
Yeah, no, and there's a chance that that's a mid-second. It could be top half of the second, which would be exciting. I'm not going to count out the Rams just because we've seen what Sean McVay can do. They added some pieces on defense, which we'll get into in a little bit. But I want to touch on that JT Sanders pick that you talked about. And typically, everybody had Brock Bowers as their number one tight end coming into this year. And the guys right after him typically range between JT Sanders and Ben Sinnott. Well, Ben Sinnott went, I believe, the pick right after Adonai Mitchell at pick 52. So I think he went 53 to Washington. And then the next tight end we took off the board, I don't think, did anybody else go? Cade Stover went a little bit later, correct?
Yeah, and Theo Johnson went right after us as well.
Yes.
So I think we were the next tight end, like 48 picks later. So I really like the value there.
And he offers a lot of upside. This is a guy that when he gets the ball in his hands, he's hard to take down. He can be a yak monster. And that's something that you need in this offense, especially with how underwhelming Tommy Tremble and Ian Thomas have been. So I like that pick. And on day three, I really think the strategy should be, and we'll see how it works out for these couple of players, the expectation should be never like that these are going to be day one impact players. They're going to be role players, hopefully special teams guys, guys that are pushing the starters and just giving you some decent depth pieces. That's really should be the expectation for those day three guys. So us drafting a cornerback, D-line, another linebacker, those are adding depth pieces, but I like the Eagles' philosophy, and we'll talk about this later when we talk about the Eagles, is they typically try to find like athletic freaks that do one thing really, really well and see if they can develop them from there. And it's worked out for them in several cases. So having a philosophy like that moving forward, I think will be key. We'll see if going the depth route that Dan Morgan did this past year pays off.
Yeah, I see what they're doing because like they're trying to turn over a new leaf, get rid of a lot of the players from the Fitterer era. So getting a couple guys on special teams, defensive depth, I understand that. That's just like as a fan, you know, you get really fixated on certain players like Brendan Rice or something like that. And you're like, oh, he's fallen. We could have grabbed him. And then when you don't grab him, you get upset. But like if the team is high on these guys and all three of the day three guys after Sanders went to the Senior Bowl, which I believe we had just hired Canales during Senior Bowl week, and that's when he and Dan Morgan really connected, reconnected because they worked in Seattle together. But they were down there together at the Senior Bowl, so clearly they value a lot of these guys who I believe were all captains on their own teams respectively. So as a whole, I'd probably give our draft a C, and hopefully there's going to be immediate upside with the offensive players and depth with the defensive players, but who knows? But I think the draft overall was exciting over the weekend. We also got some good UDFAs, but I don't know if we want to touch on those yet, considering we haven't even gotten to training camp yet, and or like rookie mini camp yet, so we don't know who's going to stick around.
Steve Smith was pretty high on this wide receiver out of Holy Cross, if you want to touch on Jalen for a second. Some of the other guys, like you said, may not even be around come training camp.
Yeah, Jalen Coker from Holy Cross, Ivy League school, so obviously didn't face the best competition, but he got a big UDFA deal, like a deal that makes you think he's going to be on the 53 or at least the practice squad. So I like that. He actually had really high production over the past couple of years. A couple of, I believe it was 1,300 yard seasons. He had 15 touchdowns this year, 6'3", good hands, like he can move really well at the top of his routes, like out of his breaks and stuff like that. I think Steve Smith had him in his top 20 receivers, so I was happy to get him, considering I thought that the Panthers should have double dipped at receiver, because I think that's it was a weakness on the squad coming into the weekend. Obviously, they get Leggett, but I think this guy has a good chance to make the roster if they don't continue to have Terrace Marshall on the team. He requested a trade last year. Nothing came of that. So I think this is a guy who could be a good receiver six. And then another guy, the Missouri kicker, Harrison Mevis, they call him the thicker kicker because he's like 240 pounds or something like that. He actually hit the longest game winner in SEC history this past year, a 61 yard field goal. So that's going to be some competition for Eddie Pinheiro, who wasn't at the voluntary workouts before the draft. So that's good competition there, but they're definitely interesting free agents. Certainly people that I had watched and looked at their tape who are on my board. So that should be interesting. And then I guess the only other big news is that we picked up J.C. Horn's fifth-year option. The fifth-year option deadline is Thursday this week. So I don't think that's really huge news. I think he kind of had to pick it up, especially considering the lack of depth at the position on our roster and his talent. But overall, a very eventful weekend for the Panthers.
Yeah, no, and hopefully J.C. Horn stays healthy this year, next year, and warrants an extension, because I'd love to keep him around. When he's on the field, he's been a great player, and it'd be perfect, and Dan Morgan alluded to this a little bit in some of the press conferences, that Stephon Gilmore may get signed. So if we bring him back in the building, I feel a lot better about our secondary. Our front seven's pretty stout. And again, just questions on the offense. We had a massive gaping hole at wide receiver last year. And the question comes back to, did we do enough? And so we'll definitely get more into that in the coming weeks. We'll touch on some points around the NFL. Like you pointed out, the fifth-year extension deadline is this coming Thursday. And now that the draft's over, and we were hearing some buzz about players maybe being traded during the draft, are there a few players that you think are still pretty much on the trade block that could find new homes before the start of the season?
Yeah, all those receivers, right? And we'll talk about the Niners in a little bit, but the fact that they drafted two receivers, one in the first round, really gives credence to the idea that they were shopping Deebo Samuel and Brandon Ayuk. And there are teams like the Steelers who still need a starting receiver who could trade for one of those guys now. But I think both of those guys are kind of on trade watch. I don't know about the Bengals people that have requested trades, because the Bengals are cheap, right? It doesn't matter if you request a trade. They're not going to trade you. They're not going to give you the deal you want. You're just going to have to suck it up and deal with it, I guess. That's what happened with Jonah Williams, with Jesse Bates, who is now the highest paid safety in the league with the Falcons. So, I don't know if T. Higgins or Trey Hendrickson are going anywhere. And then Cortland Sutton, who was upset with his deal before the draft. I don't know what's going to go on there, especially with them adding Troy Franklin at 101. So, or excuse me, 102, the pick right after JT Sanders. So we'll see. But there was a pretty big contract extension yesterday that you had alluded to when Derek Brown got drafted. And this is one of your favorite players, so I'll let you talk about it here.
Yeah. So New England got, I think, Christian Barmore for a steal of a deal. When you've seen some of the deals come off the board for Derek Brown and Quinyon Williams and Justin Madubuike, and just some of these like premier interior defensive linemen. And Barmore's obviously dealt with some injuries. He's not been on the field for every snap. But in this case, he got a 92 over 4. He got a little under $42 million guaranteed. And this is exciting. It shows that they're committed to paying their guys that they hit on. Ramondre Stevenson, I think, just came out earlier today saying he'd love to stay in New England for a while. And so you have these players that have been drafted by this organization that are looking to stay with it. And then that's how you develop a culture. So I'm really excited what Mayo and Wolf are building in New England. I really like their draft, and we'll talk about that more next week. I think they really hit out of the park and really gave themselves a good foundation to jump off of in year one. So, that I like that contract. And then the Jets traded John Franklin Myers to Denver.
Bet365 is paying out before the final whistle.
Check out Bet365's unrivaled early payout offer. When you bet on a team to win and they take a 17-point lead, you get paid no matter the final score. Forget the final whistle and start counting that cash. Hold up. You get early payout on parlays, too.
Download the app and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply.
For a 2026 sixth-round pick. So 2 years from now, the Broncos will have their sixth-round pick in the Jets' hands, and that may move hands between now and then.
Yeah, I don't know what that's about. If you look at the money savings, it's like the same deal that they gave the D-tackle from San Francisco, Javon Kinlaw, who I don't think is very good. He's just living off that first-round pedigree. And I know Jets fans, especially Jason OTC, agree that like they probably rather would have kept Franklin Myers at his number than give that contract to Kinlaw. But I guess because Saleh was there when they drafted him, there's a relation there. So I don't know. But before we talk about the draft reactions, kind of, we do need to toot our own horns a bit with our mock drafts. We both got quite a few first-round picks correct. You had, I think it was six exactly correct, and then two guys to the right team, just the wrong pick, in Fashanu and Worthy to the Jets and Chiefs, respectively. I had seven exactly correct, and then I had Keon Coleman to the Bills, who went 33, and I had Leggett to the Panthers, who went 32. So kind of splitting hairs there, but got the right teams right there. So both of us did pretty well there. And you had 28 players correct in the first round, where I had 27. So you barely beat me there, but I think we both did pretty good this year.
Yeah, no, we tend to have the right amount of guys in the first round, and mock drafts, consensus big boards have a good history of kind of these hit rates of guys that are taken in the first. It was interesting because I don't think last year we had like what, less than like four each of hitting the exact player to the exact team. So us hitting on a higher note just meant that I think our process this year was a lot better. We had a feel for the pulse of just the NFL news, and it definitely got chaotic. Six quarterbacks were taken within the first 12 picks. I think it was 14 consecutive offensive players that came off the board to start the draft. So definitely a lot of craziness in that respect, but understanding team needs and then who the teams were interested in out of those guys that fit those needs. So Fuago out of
Oregon State
went to New Orleans. We both thought that was a need for the Saints and that he would be there. And they liked Fuaga, and it sure enough, that worked out. Caleb Williams kind of scripted. Both of us talked about Marvin Harrison being a good fit in Arizona. Again, those were safe picks that we just thought made too much sense. We both had Amarius Mims to the Bengals because it fit that prototype of Orlando Brown, Trent Brown, just these big offensive tackles, and allowing him to develop and not being rushed into a starting role. So I liked that we were able to hit on more of these, and hopefully next year it only improves, because you can take these kind of predictions and these evaluations and you can turn them into money with betting on Jacob, for instance. I think you put like $15 on this past week on the first five picks being correct, and that would have been an X amount of payout. And so it's that kind of analysis and understanding, okay, what do teams want? What are teams going to do? And then how good are the players at those positions? So I'm rambling on, but we will start our draft reactions in the NFC South since we are Panthers fans. You want to start with a team, what, 6 hours south here of here?
Not even 6 hours. It's like, if you can get traffic right, it's like a 3 hour drive, 4 hour drive from Charlotte. Right down the highway to Atlanta. And we talked about how we got more picks right this year. And I thought it was interesting because I thought this year was a lot more chaotic. And I am willing to toot my own horn in the fact that I got Michael Penix as a first rounder, but I had him at 32. If you divide that by four, that's where he went at pick 8 to the Atlanta Falcons. And like my gut reaction, because I was at a bar watching this and they didn't have the sound on because they were doing music trivia, which is awesome. I love music trivia, but we were having to read Roger Goodell's lips when he was saying the names before the thing popped up. I saw him say Michael, and I'm like, who is Michael? Who are they taking at pick 8? That's Michael. And it was Michael Penix Jr. from Washington. And my thought was, what the hell? Like, you just gave Kirk Cousins $160 million, 100 guaranteed to be your QB, and then less than 6 weeks later, they draft a QB to be his backup. And not just any QB. This is a QB that was in college for 6 years, a guy that is going to be 24 in a couple of weeks. So if Kirk Cousins plays out his whole deal, you're not seeing Michael Penix on the field until he's 28. And I know Terry Fontenot was trying to explain it to reporter. He was trying to explain it to Arthur Blank in the war room. It looked like Arthur Blank was apoplectic. Fontenot looked like a guy who's like doing a pyramid scheme, trying to get you, like convince you to go with it. That's what it reminded me of. But like, he tried to say it's like the Jordan Love plan that they did with the Packers. Jordan Love just turned 24, and he sat behind a guy who was probably the best QB ever at the time, and Aaron Rodgers. And Rodgers responded by doubling his MVPs after they drafted Love. Kirk Cousins has never been that. He's been an average QB for most of his career. He's coming off of an ACL tear. He's 36 years old, and I just don't get it. Michael Penix has dealt with his own fair share of injuries. He had 4 season-ending injuries in college. He played on a pretty stacked offense with Washington. They had like 8 or 9 offensive players drafted. It's a very strong Washington offense. Shout out Kalen DeBoer, current Alabama head coach. He got quite a few of his guys drafted. But yeah, this is just bizarre, especially when you consider they had legitimate needs along the D-line, along their corners, their secondary, even their linebackers. Like, they could have taken Dallas Turner, which is what we thought. They could have taken a corner, like traded back and gotten Tyrion Arnold or Quinion Mitchell, which Terry Fontenot said, you know, we wanted a corner, but sometimes the board doesn't fall that way. The board fell that way for you. You just did the wrong thing. And I see a lot of people trying to defend this on Twitter, like more analytically inclined people like Ben Baldwin or one of the PFF, I forget, is it Kevin Cole, I think. Is who it was, but like, you can't really compare this to other backup QB drafts because this is the 8th overall pick. They were talking about Jalen Hurts or Dak Prescott. Those were late fourth round comp pick. This is the 8th overall pick in a team that needs to win the division with all the money that you spent on Kirk Cousins and the defense last year. They spent a ton on defense last year. This was just an absolute blunder to me. To me, this is the single worst pick of the entire draft.
I can't agree with you more. We talked about this pre-recording that I felt like if Michael Penix was there in the second, it would have been similar to taking Jalen Hurts or Jimmy Garoppolo or someone who had value to come in place of the starter or that you could develop behind, could become a trade asset in the case of like a Jimmy Garoppolo to a team that needs a quarterback. Taking him at 8, the best thing you can say is that you're not confident in Kirk Cousins coming back from his Achilles tear at what, 36 years old. But if that was the case, why did you just like hand him, like you said, 6 weeks ago, a $160 million deal over 4 years? So a lot of it just doesn't add up. It doesn't seem like they're on the same page or the plan lines up as it should. And that's why Arthur Blank really needed an explanation, and Fontenot has struggled to provide that. And it's just, it hasn't been good answers. It doesn't seem like it's good process. The best thing you can hope for is that if for some reason Cousins does miss time over the next like 2 years, that Penix can come in and still produce at a very high level. It's just hard to consider that when we've seen a lot of older quarterbacks who have come into the league not have as much success. And obviously Brandon Whedon kind of takes the cake with that coming in as like a 27, 28 year old rookie. But it's one of those things that having an older quarterback, you already know what you have and know that there isn't much growth there to begin with.
Right. And if the best case, and I agree with you, if the best case is that Kirk Cousins misses time and Penix comes in and plays well, you're betting on a QB that you gave $160 million to miss time. This completely wipes out the rookie QB surplus that you can get on rookie QB contracts, just having Kirk there. And they can't get rid of him until at least 2 years after.
Yep.
I think all the guarantees run out then, but let's say that they're in cap disarray next season. Well, they got to restructure Kirk and push more down the line. Now you can't get out of it. It's just a horrible, horrible pick. And it was the biggest reach, or actually the second biggest reach, according to my board. The Broncos are lucky that Atlanta did this. Otherwise, they would be having more scrutiny. But at least the Broncos, and I don't want to go on a huge AFC rant, at least the Broncos didn't have a starter at QB, right? Mm-hmm. But like, this is just a complete misallocation of draft capital and money, straight up. Because like, now what? Like, if Penix were the starter, you could spend money on corners and stuff like that. But nope, you can't anymore. So hopefully it doesn't work out for them as a Panthers fan, because I'm a hater. But I think that's a good segue into the Panthers. We kind of talked about it already, but just some of the trends for our picks this year. Like you talked about, the first four picks, all of them were here on 30 visits. So that kind of continues from the previous regime. And then
listen up, football fans. You won't want to miss this.
Right now, new Bet365 customers bet $5 and get $200 in bonus bets, win or lose. So you could turn that $200 into something bigger when you bet on Moneyline, Spread, Totals, Player Props.
$200 in bonus bets when new customers bet $5. I know where I'm going to bet from now on. Download the app today and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply. In app only.
The last three picks all went to the Senior Bowl. We also drafted three of the 49 underclassmen, which is like redshirt sophomores, right? They didn't play their first year. And Jonathan Brooks, Trevin Wallace, and Jatavion Sanders. Obviously, Leggett was at South Carolina for 5 years. Dealt with a lot of off-the-field stuff his first few years, so he didn't really get some run, but had his big breakout this past year. I think the biggest winner as Panthers fans here is that we don't have to see Ian Thomas try to catch passes anymore. I think he's going to be relegated to tight end three, and Tremble will be the blocker, and Sanders can be the seam runner tight end, so that'll be nice. And then the other thing is we beat the Roz Warrior allegations. I think our like combined average Roz score was like fourth lowest out of all the teams this year, and so it shows that they didn't go for just like combine warriors this year. They went for guys that they watched the tape on and wanted.
Yeah, no, they definitely did their homework. I don't think the Roz allegations, some of that stuff, some classes, I think Chris Ballard is probably the biggest GM to bank on it from a consistent year-to-year basis. So I'm glad that, like you said, we're turning on tape, we're identifying things that we like about different prospects, and we're taking those players and going to attempt to develop them. So love that. What I don't love is that we traded up. Lost a lot of draft capital by doing it, regardless of if it gave us a pick in each round this year and a pick in each round next year. It's just, I don't think a good allocation of the resources that we had available. And then I didn't like the position values that we took in the top 100 picks. I felt like we could have added a little bit more value or found a superstar. And we missed out on that. So with that in mind, I know we aren't doing draft grades, but for the Panthers in particular, this felt like a D to me. I know you thought it was around a C. You even alluded to that at the top of this, but it's hard for me to like what I saw over the past couple of days from the Panthers.
Yeah, I can understand that. I'm a bit more bearish on some of the players than some other fans, or even the brain trust in the front office that drafted them, but hopefully it can turn out well. The Saints, however, I think nailed their early draft, and then they didn't pick again for like 100-something picks. They got Fuaga, like we talked about, at 14. Both of us predicted that. He is an immediate need at right tackle if Ramchek can't play this year, or he can move over to left tackle if they don't trust Trevor Penning. Then they got Kool-Aid McKinstry at 41, which was a shot to my heart. I was hoping that we'd get him in the second round, but we ended up doing our wheeling and dealing. And then they didn't pick again until 150, so 109 picks later. They took the first QB since the middle of the first round in Spencer Rattler, 138 picks between QBs. I think that's the most in draft history. So QB7 comes off the board at 150. And I kind of like this pick because he can sit behind Derek Carr and learn, I guess, for a year, because I think they still have Carr on the books for 2 years with their cap situation. So I think he would at least sit this year, but I like having a competent backup there. But I definitely think Fuaga is probably my favorite pick in the entire division. I think it just fills an immediate need. I think he was ninth on my board, so really good player, falls to a team that needs him.
Yeah, and I don't want to hype up the Saints. They're a division rival, and in essence, F them. But what I like is they brought in as their offensive coordinator this year was Clint Kubiak, and Bobby Slowick, Clint Kubiak, all have been on kind of Shanahan's offense for the past couple of years. So does the Saints offense underneath that kind of tutelage, that kind of play calling, do they take a step, and does Spencer Rattler develop and he become kind of the new starter there and kind of take the reins? And you have Chris Olave already there. You have Rashid Shaheed. You have a couple nice pieces. They're trying to rebuild that offensive line. They just drafted Fuaga. I like it. I like kind of what the Saints are doing despite all the cap hell they're in from pushing the can down the road the past, I want to say, half decade now. So like where this draft is taking them, don't know if it's enough right now. So Tampa Bay, the round out the NFC South, bolstered the wide receiver depth with taking Jalen McMillan in some later rounds. Graham Barton, they took in the first round. He'll probably play either interior offensive lineman at one of the guard spots, maybe even center. Boring drafts, but they did what I think they needed to, getting positions of need, kind of filling out their roster. And I think it puts them in a position to run it back in the NFC South. It's not like they have a lot of competition. Do you think they're still the favorites in the South?
Well, I think the Falcons probably were the favorites until this past weekend. So, yeah, I definitely think the Bucs are up there. Like you said, a boring draft is what I would say, but they took positions where they needed depth and good players, like you said. They listed Barton as a center when they took him, so assuming that holds true, he's going to be their center. They got Chris Braswell, the edge rusher from Alabama. They needed edge rusher depth with Shaq Barrett leaving. Then, like you said, got McMillan, who is probably my favorite slot receiver in the draft. I was pretty big on him. He took a 30 visit here as well, so I know we were big on him too. So I really like what they did. Overall, I just think they had a solid draft, but still favorite pick in the division is Fuaga. And then you already know my least favorite pick. I don't think we need to talk about it much more.
No. I think we're good to move on. So now the NFC North, which I think probably offers some of the better storylines in this draft class. And I think this is shaping up to be one of the better, if not best, divisions in football. Kick it off with Chicago. They take Caleb Williams at 1, Roma Dunze at 9. And they do a couple other, I think, good things outside of like, I like the Austin Booker pick later in, but getting Torrey Taylor, the punter in the 4th, wasn't high on that. Caleb Williams goes into one of the best situations a rookie quarterback could ever go into. I mean, he's thrown to DJ Moore, Keenan Allen, Roma Dunze now as tight end. He's got Cole Kmet, Gerald Everett at running back. He's got, as a backup, Roschon Johnson, who they drafted last year. I don't know if Khalil Herbert's still on the
DeAndre
team.
DeAndre Swift as well.
Yep, just signed DeAndre Swift as the starter. So it's just like they have dudes all over the place on that offense. The defense came alive down the stretch last year. Is this a team that is in playoff contention this year? And if they fall short of contending for a playoff spot, like that 7th seed, is this a failure for this regime and team? Because it seems like they're loaded right now.
Yeah, I think they are in contention for one of the wild card spots. I don't think they're on the same level as Detroit and Green Bay yet, but this reminds me of the Fields rookie year. They were hanging on to an old regime that was on, I think this is their 3rd year of polls, and Eberflus, I know Eberflus was kind of criticized coming into the year. Granted, the defense did turn up post-trade deadline, so he may have gained some more faith there, but I do think that this team is good enough to make a run. It's just going to fall down to Caleb Williams and how good is he really? Is he really the generational quarterback that he was touted to be? Or is he just going to have another rookie year? Like we have to remember that this is a rookie, right? We can't expect him to come in and throw 30 touchdowns and run for 10 more and that kind of stuff. Even CJ Stroud last year, who I think had 22 touchdowns to 5 interceptions, which was like a top, 5 rookie QB season ever. That was an anomaly, and he went into a really good situation as well. So we'll have to see there. I actually really like the tackle they took, Kieran Amagaji from Yale. He's a Bears fan, or at least seems to be, because if you pull up some of his old tweets from 2019, 2020, He has stuff like, it's like, fire the whole Bears O-line, get rid of their left tackle. So it seems like he's passionate about being a Bears O-lineman, and he finally lands there. But it's hard to say that they didn't have a really good draft, because two top 10 picks, and I think they nailed both of them.
Yeah, and it'll play itself out, whether these players are hits. They're just kind of hit the threshold if they're busts. I don't think they are. I think Rome Odunze is going to be able to blossom, especially not having to be the number one option in the offense. It may hurt his fantasy stock, but in terms of the team output, I think we're looking at two guys that could be in contention for Offensive Rookie of the Year by the end of the year. So moving on, like you said, two teams they probably haven't jumped in the division. We'll start with Detroit. They really rebuilt their cornerback room after Chauncey Gardner-Johnson goes back to Philadelphia, but it was Sutton
had some of the legal trouble. Yeah.
Yes, and so they cut him immediately when that was going on. They traded for one of the Buccaneers cornerbacks,
Carlton Davis.
Yep. And then they add Terrion Arnold, your number one cornerback in the draft, Anas Rakestraw. At 61, and then Vaki, who they listed on the card, which is a good thing that you brought up earlier, what the position they wrote on the card. So in the case of the Buccaneers drafting Graham Barton, they wrote center. In the case of Vaki, they wrote running back here in Detroit. So it'll be interesting to see if he's kind of like a two-way player, if they try to do some of the funky stuff we've seen some of these college teams do with players. But I think he'd be perfect as a safety on this team to kind of fill out that back end.
Yeah, they there was clear needs and they attacked it, right? Like you said.
Listen up, football fans. You won't want to miss this.
Right now, new Bet365 customers bet $5 and get $200 in bonus bets, win or lose. So you could turn that $200 into something bigger when you bet on Moneyline, Spread, Totals, Player Props.
$200 in bonus bets when new customers bet $5. I know where I'm going to bet from now on. Download the app today and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply. In app only.
Two starting corners, or a starting corner and a nickel, to pair along with some of their other reinforcements that they brought in. And Brian Branch last year, who, for my money, probably could have been Defensive Rookie of the Year. Like, obviously, they had to go with Will Anderson, but I think Branch had a really good year, too. And then they also added O-line reinforcements. They did lose their guard to the Rams. They replaced him with Kevin Zeitler, but I think it's a one-year deal, and he's older. And they drafted the British Columbia tackle, Giovanni Manu, who's kind of a project. And they got Christian Mahogany at pick 210, and he was like my 70th player or something like that. So pretty good value there. I thought they had a really good draft as well. Both the teams so far in the division have had good drafts, but I think Detroit is like going and aiming to be the best team in the NFC this year. And with some of their free agent and draft picks, it's hard to see them not being at least a top two or three team in the NFC.
We'll see. I think the Cowboys and Eagles had good drafts, and the 49ers we'll get into a little bit. I think you're a little bit more down and I'm a little bit more bullish on kind of how their draft panned out. But moving on to the next team in the NFC North, we have the Green Bay Packers, and they had the big upset against the Cowboys. They took the 49ers down to the wire last January, and they're a team looking to kind of also contend for the NFC. They had the most picks going into the draft, and it felt like they just drafted to more fill like the depth of the roster, not so much trying to hit home runs. They had focused a lot of their draft capital the past couple of years and giving weapons for Jordan Love. And now it's like, okay, we have a couple of these holes. We get Jordan Morgan that kind of helps stabilize the offensive line. They took four defensive backs and two linebackers to help kind of fill out the back seven, because you're probably going to play a lot more nickel and dime against some of these more high octane offenses. And it's trying to make sure you have bodies to throw at these positions and see what hits. Because if you have two of these defensive backs hit, a linebacker hits, you're creating starters in that back end that can be big contributors down the stretch when you're trying to make a playoff push. So I love what Green Bay did. It wasn't sexy, very much similar to the Buccaneers, where it was more boring. It feels like it's like that B, maybe B minus, where it's just you did enough, but nothing flashy.
Right. And if you look at their like skill position players, their wide receivers, tight ends, they were all like rookies or second year players last year. So they have young stars in the making at all those positions. They didn't like really need to add anybody. They did add Josh Jacobs in the running back room. So they have their starting running back. They ended up taking one as well in the draft. But like you said, they're just throwing bodies at defensive back and linebacker. And I think that's what you have to do, because at the end of the day, after round one, really, these are all dart throws, right? And if they're throwing four darts at defensive back and two at linebacker and one or two from each hit, that's a win, right? And then they also draft three O-linemen. You talked about Jordan Morgan. He'll probably be the starter at left or right tackle, whatever they need him to do. I think this is a solid draft for them as well. And Green Bay is definitely on the rise. Like you said, they just mollywopped the Saints, or not the Saints, excuse me, the Cowboys in AT&T Stadium in the playoffs. And then, like you said, took the Niners down to the wire. I think they're trending up, especially if Jordan Love continues to perform at the level he did last year. I think this is a good position for the team to be in the post-Rodgers era. I think they're doing a good job.
Yeah. No, what Matt LaFleur is doing, he's one of the better coaches in the NFL. He's not talked about enough because, yes, when he came onto the scene, Rodgers has two MVP seasons. He's looking like the Rodgers of old, and it's like, how much is it Rodgers? How much is it LaFleur? You turn on the tape last year, it's LaFleur. He does a really good job at putting guys in space and allowing his playmakers to make plays. And that's all you can really ask from a coach. Minnesota took an interesting approach to this draft. In the first round, they had two picks at 11 and 23. They ended up moving up from both of those picks to grab premium positions. They drafted J.J. McCarthy at 10, just switching between the Jets between 10 and 11. And then the Vikings, I think, moved up with the Jaguars at pick 17 to take Dallas Turner, who fell, who I thought was a top 10 pick. And honestly, I was a little surprised that the Colts actually passed on him for Leitu Latu. Again, like when we talked about the edges, edge class a couple weeks ago, these two could almost be synonymous, and Latu's production was phenomenal. The biggest question was a lot of his medicals. So hopefully the Colts did their homework on that one. But in terms of this, Minnesota, I think, got two guys that can really be day one impact players. You're putting McCarthy in a situation where he's got Justin Jefferson, Jordan Addison, TJ Hockenson. He's got weapons and playmakers around him. He's got a solid offensive line in front of him. I feel like that's a really good position to allow him to grow and develop. And then I think Turner, I mean, Brian Flores is just going to cut him loose. So I don't know what your thoughts are on them before we move on. But yeah, I enjoyed that outside of them taking Will Reichard, the Alabama kicker at 203. Really thought it was a decent job by Kweze.
Well, listen, Will Reichard has scored the most points in NCAA history, so I can get that one. And also, shout out to him for being drafted. That means Nick Saban has had at least one of every position drafted. Only head coach to ever do that. So really cool story there. But the more I see McCarthy and like imagine the fit with Minnesota, the more I like the fit there. I think he can like thrive and succeed there. I know I was a little bit lower on him than consensus, but I think if you put him in a good spot with a strong O-line, which they have. They have the best receiver in the league, a really good young receiver in Addison, good tight end in Hockenson. They bring Aaron Jones in, who's probably going to have two revenge games this season against Green Bay. I really like what they've done. And then you talk about Dallas Turner. It's going to be Brian Flores' like dream player that he can move around. Nick Saban himself said on the broadcast, because he did the draft broadcast for like the college group, he said a lot of people want to comp him to Will Anderson, but he really thinks he's more of Dante Hightower, an older school Nick Saban player that can be moved inside, use him as a spy, and can be a very effective rusher in his own right. So I think that's a really good fit there. And I also like them getting two other O-linemen and Kyrie Jackson, the Oregon corner, who's like 6'4", crazy wingspan. He's a bit stiff, but I think he'll be able to maybe switch to safety and play back there in Brian Flores' scheme. So I really enjoyed all of the drafts here from all the NFC North teams, but I think the best pick has to be Caleb Williams. It's just hard to not have that be the best pick. They had the number one pick. This was the heir apparent QB for years. Even though I like Drake May a little bit better, I think that's a good landing spot, especially not even especially. I think this is the best landing spot for a number one QB ever. And that's why I like the pick there.
Yeah. No, I mean, you're putting him in the best position to succeed. It's like what we talked about with McCarthy in Minnesota. If you're going to put a quarterback in an offense, and I'm really excited to see what Shane Waldron whips up in Chicago. Now, a division that I think rivals the NFC North in terms of the draft class and the talent that got brought in and what we may see this fall was the NFC East. Dallas rates as one of the better drafters over the past several years, according to Kevin Cole, with his kind of breakdown with positions and trades and how much surplus was generated. He thought the Cowboys, when you removed quarterbacks, based on his calculations, the Cowboys had the best draft class. And I liked that they went Tyler Guyton in the first round. They got Cooper Bebe on day two. Marshawn Nealon, you weren't as high on Jacob, but a lot of other NFL analysts and teams were really high on him, liked his motor, liked his ability to kind of play all over the defensive line. And I think he'll pair well with Micah Parsons, DeMarcus Lawrence, Mozzie Smith, some of those guys, be a good replacement for Dorrance Armstrong, who's going to Washington. So I think they did really well outside of addressing the wide receiver position, which they didn't address until pick 216. So that's not something you can really bank on for having immediate impact. When we saw Noah Brown develop with the Cowboys, and I think he was like a fifth, sixth round pick, he didn't kind of blossom until like year three, four. And so that may be the case with the guy that they took. I think it was
Ryan Flourney.
There we go. Mm-hmm. So that's who they took at pick 216. Not super high on him, but their draft as a whole, I was really impressed by.
Yeah, I like what they did. I like a lot of the players they got early. I like Kalen Carson too, the Wake Forest. Probably going to be a nickel corner in the league. But this kind of goes back to what I was saying regarding free agency. They need at least Guyton and BB to hit, like, be starters, and probably Nealon to be a, like, plus rotation player in year one. And the draft just doesn't yield that normally. Like, the hit rate is not that high on picks, even for a good team like the Cowboys. These are all dart throws, and they're going to need a lot of these darts to hit if they want to continue to be the best team in the division and one of the best teams in the NFC. So I like the players, but they have to be immediate, like, at least average starters, like Guyton and Cooper Beebe have to be for that to work. But like, other than that, I like the players. It's just there's going to be so much demand for them early on, and I don't know if they're going to be able to live up to it.
The Cowboys are really good evaluators. We've seen their evaluation on Tyler Smith and other offensive linemen over the past decade, and I feel like they will come in and be day one contributors. One of them may not pan out as well as the other. Guyton does seem to project as more of a project rather than just a concrete guy that you have. That's why I thought Jordan Morgan would be a better fit from a day one standpoint. He just went a couple picks earlier to the Green Bay Packers. So and that was when the Cowboys traded with the Chiefs, when the Chiefs moved up for Worthy. Now, the next team in the NFC East that we're going to talk about, the Giants, they took a player that you projected them to take, Malik Nabers. They took Odell Beckham back in the 2013 draft. Excuse me, I can't speak. It was
2014.
Yeah. So exactly 10 years ago, they took Odell Beckham out of LSU. And that was when you had Dave Gettleman kind of in that front. No, he was with the Panthers, but Odell Beckham was his wide receiver one. Previously came from the Giants. They're big on their wide receivers. They take him. He's a game changer, has the one-handed catch. He's a legend in Giants history. I feel like Nabers could potentially hit that ceiling as well. I think he is a world-class athlete. I think he is going to tear it up on Sundays. He is extremely explosive. And I think he's going to unlock the rest of that wide receiving core room. I know you aren't as high on Jalin Hyatt, Wandale Robinson, but I feel like some of these guys are going to be able to expand kind of their role in the offense and play a bigger role moving forward. It's just whether or not Daniel Jones can put it all together and get the ball to these guys.
Yeah, I think Nabers is exactly what they needed. They did end up missing out on a QB. It's them and the Raiders that didn't get any of the QBs, so that kind of stinks there. But if they're going to roll with Daniel Jones, and it seems like they are, because, I mean, they won a playoff game with him a couple years ago in Dable's inaugural season there, they're going to need playmakers. And like you said, I'm not as high on the other receivers that they brought in, SEC receivers. It seems like they have a theme there. But I think Malik Nabers is really a difference maker. I think he's like a more explosive, but earlier career DJ Moore is how I kind of look at him, who can just create explosive plays down the field, super fast, can good ball tracker, catch stuff down the field. And the Giants really haven't had that in quite a while. maybe even since Odell Beckham was there. I like some of their other picks too. The two DBs they took, Tyler Newbin and Andrew Phillips, I think they're going to pair well with Deontay Banks, who they took early last year. And then a guy that you talked about before we were recording, Theo Johnson, with the Darren Waller impending retirement, I think he's going to have to step in and provide early alongside the other tight end that they had last year. I can't recall his name. It was the guy who had the eye injury midway through the season, but I think he's going to be a good 12 personnel fit because we know Dable comes from Belichick, comes from the Bills, where 12 personnel seems to be more of a thing.
Yeah, no, they're going to lean more 12 personnel, get bigger that way rather than go 21 personnel. It's just a preference thing between different offensive styles. But like you said, I think they added some good pieces. They put themselves in a position to compete. The question is, can they get back to the playoffs? Can they be in playoff contention? Can they stay healthy? Can their offensive line take a step? They've invested a lot of high draft picks into the offensive line, and it hasn't necessarily panned out. So moving on to a team that is trying to get back into the mix in terms of winning the NFC Championship game, getting back to the Super Bowl. It's the Philadelphia Eagles. They had a big issue last year in their secondary and really back seven. They had a lot of injuries to the linebackers and cornerbacks and safeties down the stretch. And so what they do is they immediately grab Quinyon Mitchell, who falls to them at 22, 23, I believe. And then in the second round, they trade up and they get Cooper DeJean. And I think having those two guys, still having Slay and James Bradbury, gives you a lot of flexibility if somebody gets hurt. And I think they're just really smart players and they're going to cohesively gel together. So when you have that much talent on the back end, I think it's good. Howie Roseman came out and said when he was talking in a press conference that the guys that they eye in day three, and this was something I was alluding to earlier, but guys on day three, you're going to look at more athletic traits, something they do really, really well. And so Jason Kelce, Jordan Mailata, these are guys taken on day three and later. And who do they grab in day three this year? Johnny Wilson out of Florida State. And this dude is massive. And I don't think he's as polished as some of the other wide receiver or even tight end prospects. And I know some people have said that he's a tight end. The Eagles have claimed he's a wide receiver, and that's how they intend to use him. But it's one of those things. He gets to go behind A.J. Brown, Devontae Smith, and you allow him to develop, and Jalen Hurts finds him and has a bigger target to throw to. You're just creating another head on this beast that is the Eagles offense, because you have the running attack with Saquon and now Jalen Hurts. You have the passing options with A.J. Brown, Devontae Smith, Dallas Goedert. And if you're in 11 personnel and you throw now Johnny Wilson in the mix, it's just, it's a mismatch nightmare. And it's going to be very interesting to see how defenses defend Kellen Moore's offense this fall.
Yeah, this is probably my favorite draft overall that we're going to talk about today. Spoilers. Early, it kind of reminded me of the Lions draft. You know, they take two corners, DBs that should start immediately, considering how bad really Slay and Bradbury and the rest of them were last year. They were both pretty bad following those offseason extensions. So they get Mitchell, who should start. DeJean might be a safety. We don't know. And then you talked about day three. Every single one of their picks, except maybe Trotter, the Clemson linebacker, I think are traitsy guys. Jalix Hunt, long edge rusher. Will Shipley, a guy that has, and this isn't hyperbole, like McCaffrey receiving level ability out of the backfield. Anaya Smith, real speedster, maybe one of the fastest wide receivers in the draft, like per GPS, like if you time him. He'll probably be a returner early in his career, but he'll add some speed to the receiver room. Trevor Keegan, really big O-lineman from Michigan who can be a good backup there. Dylan McMahon, the center from NC State. You know, Jason Kelce's retirement. I don't know if they're going to move Landon Dickerson inside or anything, but at least they have depth now on the inside. And then, like you talked about, Johnny Wilson, 6'7", 230-pound receiver. You just don't see those, right? And I guess that's why a lot of people think that he could be a tight end in the future. I initially thought that as well, but if they're going to keep him at a receiver, and I don't think that the offense they ran at Florida State was conducive to wide receiver success. You could say the same thing about Keon Coleman, but I think if they're going to keep him at receiver, he is a bit of a project, but if he pans out, who's going to beat him in a red zone jump ball situation? Like, nobody ever. Maybe Night Train Lane if we do have a time machine, but like that, I think that's a good pick there. And they get their needs early and then take a bunch of traitsy guys, and I think it's going to work out for them, because if you're going to throw darts on day three, you need, like, you might as well throw them at some people that are good, really good at one thing, and then try to work with them and build the rest of their game and repertoire and stuff like that. So really, really love the Eagles draft.
Yeah, no. And what Howie does well is he takes guys that fall to him on the consensus board. It's why analysts love him, is that he kind of just adheres to that, takes the value that's there. He doesn't hit a lot of home runs outside of the Jalen Hurts pick. And then obviously we've talked about Jordan Mailata and some of these other late round gems that he'll find. But where he makes his money is just like trading back, gaining picks next year, and just increasing his resources to where if he wants to make a move and trade for an AJ Brown, it's not going to cripple him from a draft capital standpoint or a cap standpoint. And that's just kind of the brilliant way of how he goes about team building. So last team on the block in the NFC East, Washington Commanders, they had the second overall pick. I believe they were top three in cap space coming into the year, signed a bunch of veterans to help kind of build a culture there under Dan Quinn and Cliff Kingsbury. And they take Jaden Daniels at two. And that's probably a reach. They should have taken May, and we'll talk about that. And then I thought they got some day two studs. I like the Johnny Newton pick. I like the Mike Sanrastil pick. And I like the Ben Sinnott pick, even though I feel like they've reached for Ben Sinnott. I feel like those are guys that are going to be immediate day one impact players and are going to kind of carve in a role. And I know Johnny Newton's probably not a day one starter because you have Daron Payne and Jonathan Allen. Allen comes off the books in 2 years. So I think it's a great plug in where he gets to learn from two of the best and really take his game to the next level.
Yeah, the value is certainly there with Jerzon Newton and the rest of the day two picks. I think day two is my favorite day from them. But yeah, going back to Jaden Daniels, I do think that this was maybe the incorrect pick there. I think Drake May or even McCarthy may have been better there, better suited to run in Cliff Kingsbury's offense, which is like this weird air raid amalgamation that I don't think is going to work well in the NFL. In my opinion, he kind of ruined Kyler Murray's early years. I'm really big on Kyler Murray, and I just don't see it there. Jaden Daniels comes in as one of the oldest QBs to be drafted in the last 10 years, especially as the second overall pick. But I think if they like can put some good stuff in place around him, he'll do well. But we got to look at his overall collegiate career. He's thrown to Ricky Pearsall at Arizona State. He's thrown to Johnny Wilson, who we just talked about. Brandon Ayuk, he threw to his true freshman year in a game against Justin Herbert. I think that was their last Pac-12 game that season. They ended up beating the Oregon Ducks. He's thrown to Brian Thomas, who we'll talk about next week, Malik Nabers, who just went sixth overall. So I think he's been in a good spot.
Did you bring up Ricky Pearsall?
I did.
Yep. Yeah. At the top.
He played at Arizona State and transferred to Florida. Yeah. He also, both of his tackles are going to be probably top 15-ish picks next year. That's how good they are. So I don't know. I think he's been quite insulated his career, but we'll see here. I think this is definitely, aside from the Patriots, I think this is the least favorable offense situation that all the big QB or like the early QBs went to. Maybe Denver as well, but I trust Sean Payton as a scheme designer and play caller much, much more than I do Cliff Kingsbury. But overall, I like their day two a lot. Day three, not a huge fan of. I don't know too much about a lot of the people they drafted, but they did get their quarterback, so that's always a good thing. But it's just hard for me with Washington when the offseason hype was, all right, they're going to get Ben Johnson, and he's going to work with Adam Peters and the new ownership group, and it's all kind of fallen through since then to Dan Quinn, to Cliff Kingsbury, to not getting a top two QB in Williams or May, and now this is just kind of what it is, and we'll have to see what happens here. But yeah,
I think this just confirms,
it is what it is.
I think this just confirms why Ben Johnson didn't take a second interview with the Washington Commanders. And I think the belief is that Adam Peters and Josh Harris, the new ownership group for Washington, they really had their eyes set on Jaden Daniels. And he was a big Drake May believer. I'm sure he liked Sam Howell. And some of the signs that they were doing all offseason were pointing to that exact point. And so I think Ben Johnson will take a head coaching opportunity. It's just going to come when it's the right fit. And in that case, he didn't like the quarterback he was going to be given and didn't think he could maximize his potential. So good on Ben Johnson if that was the case. Maybe it was that he just wanted too much money and was content where he was at. But moving on, you brought up Kyler Murray and Cliff Kingsbury. So we'll start with the Arizona Cardinals to wrap up the last division, the NFC West. And they did exactly what we thought they would do, and that was stay put at pick four and draft the best player in this draft class in Marvin Harrison Jr. And I think he's going to be a star. I think he's going to open up kind of what I was saying with Malik Nabers in New York, the rest of that wide receiver room. They obviously traded Rondale Moore to Atlanta, but they still have Michael Wilson. And I think a couple other players they've drafted over the past couple of years, Greg Dortch and a few other guys. And I think that's just going to give them the ability to play to their skill set and be the receivers that they can be. Why Marvin Harrison just becomes an animal out on the field. And he's gotten some comps to Larry Fitzgerald. He's quiet like Fitzgerald is too. And I like that demeanor. It's just, it oozes confidence because he just trusts his game and his talent and his ability. And the tape speaks for itself.
Yeah, I think skinny Larry Fitzgerald is like the perfect comp for him. He can do really anything you want him to on the football field. And he's going to be a true star for them, I think. The rest of their draft, they had, including Marvin Harrison Jr., they had seven top 100 picks after some trading that they did. And I think they got a lot of pretty immediate impact players. They got Darius Robinson, who they listed as a defensive tackle. So he is going to play more of the interior like we thought he would. Max Melton, one of the best nickel corners in the draft this year. Trey Benson was the second running back taken. I know you were really big on him. They got Isaiah Adams, who's a guard from Illinois. Tip Raymond, a tight end from Illinois. I know a lot of people in the media are high on him. And then Elijah Jones, the corner from Boston College, to round out those top 100 picks. Then they obviously had five more picks after that. We talk about dart throws, right, when we bring up the draft. For a team that was rebuilding, this was the highest team that didn't pick a QB this year. They didn't have Kyler Murray for the first, I think, 10 games to start the season, and now he's fully healthy. For a team that's rebuilding, that outperformed what they should have last year, I think, with Jonathan Gannon as the new head coach, I think this is the perfect way to approach the draft. You get a star who is as close to, knock on wood, like scheme-proof, fail-proof as anybody that we've seen recently is. And then you throw 12 or what is it? Yeah, 12 other darts at the board. I think that's the perfect thing to do for a rebuilding team that doesn't really have established stars anywhere else other than QB and I guess the left tackle now that they drafted Paris Johnson last year. So they're building it the right way, and I'm pretty happy with that.
Yeah, and I like pairing Darius Robinson from an inside standpoint, especially since they drafted, I think it was B.J. Ojulari last year. Their offensive line from a tackle standpoint is pretty set. They draft three cornerbacks, like you said, Max Melton being one of them. They're trying to replenish that back end and kind of just build it through, okay, like you said, darts on a board. Just how many can we hit? And then after that, we can reevaluate and then we can attack position needs and free agency and then hit on another draft class. And so Monty Ozenfor is kind of coming into his own in Arizona. We'll see how it all plays out. The Rams, Les Snead continues his fuck them picks mantra, trades a future second to move up and get Braden Fisk to bolster the defensive line. They took Jared Verse in the first. The pick that had me kind of more scratching my head, and it may more to do with how Sean McVay is morphing and evolving into a different play caller with Stafford as the quarterback. But we've seen a lot more like typical dropbacks and not so much of the bootleg or play action looks that we saw earlier on with McVay and Goff and even in some of the other Shanahan offenses. And so you wonder with the selection of Blake Corum out of Michigan, who is more of a gap scheme runner and not an outside zone, if they're going to try to incorporate more of that and have a 1-2 punch that we have certain run designs with Blake Corum on the field and we have certain run designs with who is their star last year? That Kyren Williams. So have that kind of like almost like vanilla chocolate. And then from those, you can have different pass type concepts and just really open up the field that way. So I don't know if that's the vibe Les Snead and Sean McVay are going. I'm going to give them the benefit of the doubt. I just wasn't fully sold on the Blake Corum fit within that offense.
Yeah, I'm always going to give McVay the benefit of the doubt on offense. He's one of the most brilliant play callers the league's ever seen. But when I look at Kyren Williams and Blake Corum, I think their traits for each of them make them multiple and that they can fit different kinds of schemes. Kyren Williams is a good catcher out of the backfield, one of the best pass blocking backs I've ever seen. And then Blake Corum has the best vision of probably any running back I've evaluated. So I think he's going to be able to find gaps, find running lanes, regardless of if it's a gap scheme, outside zone, inside zone, whatever you want. I think he's going to be able to move the ball effectively regardless. And he can block a little bit, so he'll be able to be on the field for a good time or for a long time regardless. The rest of their draft I really like, though. We talked about coming into the season last year when we did our division breakdowns. We said, all right, name people on their defense other than Aaron Donald. And we couldn't do it outside of like Akello Witherspoon and some of their draft picks that year. Well, some of those draft picks like Byron Young, Kobe Turner on the interior performed very well. And they definitely addressed the defensive side of the ball this year and bolstered it. They draft Jared Verse at 19, trade up for Fiske, like you said, to hopefully be not the Aaron Donald replacement, but replace some of his production in the aggregate. And then they end up drafting two other defensive linemen, a safety in Cam Kitchens, who's going to be a monster. He's like a really like heavy, tall safety that's going to be a hitter. And then later in the draft, they get some O-line reinforcements and a flyer on Jordan Whittington, who's like 6'5 for a receiver. So like good measurables there. But overall, I think my number one takeaway here is as a Puka Nacua shareholder in fantasy, I'm very happy with their draft.
Yes, they didn't add another weapon, which was very intriguing. They, again, focused on bolstering kind of the trenches, which is something Les Snead has done over the past couple of years, and it's worked out for them. So we'll see how it all comes together. I think if Stafford's age starts to reflect in his performance a little bit more, we'll see a decline. A team that has a chance to kind of usurp the Rams, and they kind of did 2 years ago, kind of sneaking into the playoff picture. But I think that's the Seattle Seahawks under Mike McDonald. I like what they did in the draft. They took the best player available with Byron Murphy at pick, was it 16? Mm-hmm. And it's just like what he's going to be able to do next to Leonard Williams, next to Draymond Jones. You add in the fact that they have Boye Mafe and Derek Hall and Uchenna Nwosu. They have guys like Jaron Reed and Jonathan Hankins who can just take up space in the middle. It just feels like McDonald is going to have simulated pressures that are just going to create havoc on the offensive line. And he was one of the only defensive play callers that could slow Kyle Shanahan, Sean McVay down. So it will be very interesting to see how this defense stacks up in the NFC West. I think it has a great chance of being one of the better defenses this year, just with the amount of stars, not only in the front seven that I listed off, but when you look on the back end and see that they have Julian Love, Reek Woolen, Devin Witherspoon, it just feels like everything's coming together for them, especially when they add Laken Tomlinson and Christian Haynes this offseason to bolster the interior of their offensive line. So love what the Seahawks are doing. I think they're putting Mike McDonald in a great situation to succeed in. We'll see if Ryan Grubb, the new offensive coordinator, can churn out the production that we've seen the Seattle offense being capable of doing underneath Shane Waldron and Marty Schottenheimer.
Yeah, you talk about him slowing down Shanahan and McVay. He also slowed down the Lions offense last year, which was at the time one of the more powerful offenses. So I think he's really built to have a strong NFC defense and maybe the best NFC defense against other contenders in the conference. So I really like the additions they made on defense, Byron Murphy. They added the two Auburn corners and Tyrese Knight from UTEP, who I thought was a good flyer as an edge rusher. I think he's toolsy, but just needs more tape. And then with their other picks, they addressed the offensive line. And I know we thought that offensive line depth is something they should have looked into, and that's what they did. Added Laken Tomlinson, drafted Christian Haynes, drafted two tackles on day three as well. And then they added a tight end as well because they had that rotation that they had, the three-headed monster, and I think they only brought one of them back. And so they add A.J. Barner from Michigan, who I believe is a favorite of Nate Tice on the Athletic Football Show. I didn't watch him much, so I don't know, but I guess other people in the media like him, so that's a good pick there.
Yeah, I think overall this was one of those draft classes where it fell into not necessarily the most sexy, but I think when you look at the positions they addressed, how they went about kind of filling needs on the roster, they're not in a great cap situation because they already have a lot of their stars locked up It's more a matter of just maximizing their window and putting their best foot forward to try to make a run at an NFC West title and maybe a playoff push within the NFC. So we'll see how that all plays out. I do like kind of how the roster is constructed. They have Sam Howell as a backup, who I think is an adequate starter if Geno Smith was the missed time due to injury. So really, really great position this team has put themselves in for the next couple of years. So that leaves us with one team left in the NFC to wrap up before we get the perfect takes. That's the San Francisco 49ers. And like you brought up earlier, Debo and Ayuk may be on the move this offseason because they drafted Ricky Purcell at pick 31 and then your wide receiver 10, I believe, and Jacob Coing at pick 135. So Jacob Coing, great separator, great route runner. Same thing with Ricky Purcell. And you get these two phenomenal separators on an offense with Kyle Shanahan that already features Brandon Ayuk, George Kittle, Debo Samuel, Christian McCaffrey. And now it's like anybody you have on the field, and they brought back Juwan Jennings, who's a dog in the run game and a good route runner, good receiver. And it seems like they have weapons galore. And so while they didn't address maybe the offensive line concerns as much as they should have, they drafted two guys in Dominique Pouni and Jarrett Kingston, both later day two, day three picks. But I like this. I think it gives them the flexibility to move off one of the wide receivers that are going to be too expensive and still have the production on the offensive side. And that's really the big thing. You don't want to skip a beat if you don't have Debo or Ayuk. And if one of those were to go down, if they try to run this back and keep everybody together for one more year, now you know if one of them goes down that the guy that's stepping in for them is going to be able to kind of like keep that offense on track and keep you from falling behind the sticks. So I love it. I think this was one of the better draft classes in the NFC. I think they've put themselves in a position, especially when they drafted Isaac Grondo, one of the faster running backs. I think better running back prospects not talked about as a zone scheme runner. Fits perfectly into this offense. If McCaffrey misses time, again, like what we talked about, a guy that can just jump in and replace that value, you have that on this team now. So I like it. I like it. Should have addressed the offensive line maybe a little bit more, but overall, just it's great job by John Lynch and Kyle Shanahan here.
Yeah, you talk about the receivers, Purcell, Coing, great route runner, great separator, great name too, as far as Jacob Coing is concerned. But I really like what they did overall, like you're talking about. Added like depth weapons that can step in at a moment's notice. On defense, they added a couple of DBs who I really like Malik Mustafa next to Hufanga, their all-pro safety. I think that'll be a good pairing. And Renardo Green, while he didn't have a ton of production, he was good like as a cover corner last year. So I like that. The more I look at this class, the more I think that offensive line may not be the concern I was worried about. It might be the defensive line. And I know that they bring in YGM from us. They bring in Leonard Floyd. But they also lose Eric Armstead. They lose Chase Young, who wasn't the best. But to go from a defensive line with Armstead, who was Pro Bowl, All-Pro caliber, Nick Bosa, to more replacement-level players – I'm not too huge upon, especially when that D-line rotation is what's been their bread and butter the past, it's been like half a decade that they've had this little run that they've had. So maybe they could have added more along the D-line, but I agree with you. I think this is good overall, especially if they're going to end up moving Debo Samuel or Brandon Ayuk.
Yeah. No, it gives them that flexibility, and that's key. So we'll see again how this all plays out. Remaining free agents, now that we're kind of getting into the second and third waves of just filling out the rest of the roster, if maybe they address some of those defensive line concerns, maybe they do a player trade with a wide receiver and try to get a defensive lineman instead. We've seen like the Deontay Johnson for Dante Jackson trade with the Steelers and Panthers. So maybe something like that can be lined up in the books where a team with a lot of defensive linemen wants to kind of swap because they need a wide receiver. Could be a perfect win-win for both teams. So we'll see how it all plays out. We are in the perfect take section of this episode. Went a little bit longer, but that's to be expected as we are touching on 16 different drafts and kind of our takes on what happened between Thursday and Saturday. I think my take here is that the top three teams in the NFC, are going to be a combination of the Eagles. I think the 49ers still stay in conversation this year. And then I'm going to throw in the Packers. I like the Packers' solid draft class. I think they did enough to kind of bolster their roster, and they'll take a step with Jordan Love in year two, and they'll surpass the Lions. We'll see if that's the case, but those are my top three teams, one from the NFC East, one from the NFC West, and one from the NFC North.
I like that. I'm a bit higher on Detroit, I suppose, but when we do our predictions episode way a ways from now, I guess we can get into that a bit more. My take is I'm going all the way back to the beginning of when we were breaking down the drafts. The Falcons' mistake here, this is one of the worst mistakes I've seen in quite a while in the first round. I think it's going to haunt them. I don't think they're going to win the division. I thought they were probably a shoe-in to win it with the addition of Kirk Cousins, assuming that they could bolster the defense, and they didn't really do that. Granted, they spent like three or four picks on D linemen, but I was not a fan of like any of those picks. They lose who was the coordinator last year?
For who?
The Falcons. Their deal.
Oh, their defense was Ryan Nielsen.
I liked him, but he goes to Jacksonville now. And I'm a fan of Raheem Morris, but I'm not sure that with this current defense that they have, that they're going to replicate what they did last year. So they're not going to win the division, and their draft, mainly that first round, is why.
Yeah, you could have added a difference maker on the defensive side that could have been a day one starter. You actually gained some surplus value instead of banking on an insurance plan, an insurance policy that cost a top 10 pick in the NFL draft. So definitely weird draft strategies by a interdivision team. I'm not complaining. I love it. I think that's going to put the Falcons in purgatory for the next few years, and hopefully the Saints will join them here soon once all their cap problems catch up with them. So with that in mind, the future is looking bright. Obviously was not happy with his draft class, but the hope is that the vision that Dave Canales, Dan Morgan have for this team comes to fruition. We're able to take a step from where we were last year. We start seeing the development of Bryce Young now that we've been able to put bodies in front of him to protect him and add a couple more weapons on the perimeter for him to throw to. So while I don't think it was enough, adding Xavier Leggett, Deontay Johnson, those could still be needle movers at the end of the day that contribute to us winning games. And that's what we care about as fans. What drives us to create this podcast is seeing this team succeed. So with all that in mind, if you guys have questions, comments, shoot them to us at perfect_takes. We're all wrapped up for this week's episode, and we'll catch you next week.